Welcome back to Live Exceptionally. I'm Dr. Yvonne, your host, founder of Elisi, and author of Can You Sleep Like This in the Rest of God? Imagine a future where your finances are not a source of stress, but a foundation for dreams. Financial planning is not just about numbers and budgets. It's about building a life that's rich and free from financial worry, whether it's securing a comfortable retirement, buying a home, or funding a education. Financial planning is the roadmap to our aspirations and our goals. It means that we start our journey today in order to take control of tomorrow. Sharing with us today is Fabian Smith, financial coach of Blue Skies Financial Advisors. And what's unique to their approach are three things. One, building a plan that reflects one's values. Two, supporting your goals. And three, preparing for a plan for the inevitable, whatever life throws our way. Let's listen in. Morning, Fabian. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Dr. Yvonne. It is a pleasure to be here with you on today.
The first thing I want to just jump right in and ask you, explain the difference between personal choices and stewardship.
Okay. And that's actually a kind of a good place to start. But, you know, what I like to do before I kind of jump in is I kind of like to make sure that we're all, reading from the same playbook and we have the same kind of understanding of some of the terminology that I'm going to use. So first thing I want to do is I want to kind of define the word steward so we can have a common understanding. So when I say steward, what I'm referring to is a manager of a resource that someone doesn't own or that's in short or limited supply. So a steward is basically a manager. And then the resources that I'm referring to are actually three resources. And we're probably all familiar with them, the resource of time. You know, we only have a limited amount of time on this earth, right, for our lifespan. So we got to manage the time that we have. The second resource is the talent that we have, the things that we've learned how to do either through school or through experience. So we've got talent. We need to be able to manage that. And then the last thing is the resource of treasure, which is our financial resources, is, income we've earned from our jobs or wealth that we've accumulated. So we've got our steward. We've got the resources that we have. So I actually started a series. It's called Good Stewardship. And there's kind of two kind of lanes that I go in where that's concerned. So one says good stewardship, managing the 90% is geared more towards a religious body or people of belief where, we talk about the tithe or 10% and then learn how to manage the other 90. It's a four-part series. Then I have a shorter one called Good Stewardship. It's all about choices. And it talks about kind of the three choices that we as stewards kind of have to make. So when you ask about the difference between personal choices and stewardship, they're actually intertwined because you have to make certain choices as a steward. And those are always personal choices to kind of, achieve that good stewardship status. So
when you talk about there's three types of choices, can you dig in a little bit more about what that includes?
Okay, sure. So one of the things that I always start off with as a financial coach is, I don't start with planning and goals and budgets and stuff like that. What I start with is the choice of values. How do I define myself? What choices do I make in terms of who I am and what I represent? So once I start there, with the coaching session is the first choice is, what are my values? Am I basing who I am based on what others tell me, or am I basing it based on who I feel that I am? And then I can make better choices as opposed to, choosing what somebody else says I should do as opposed to myself. The second choice is I have to choose the actions that I take. Are they going to be for the now me or the future me? So there's two me's that exist. There's a me that lives right now, and then there's a me that's going to live in the future. So the choices I make are going to impact both the now me and the future me. So I have to make choices that, the now me is going to write a check that the future me is going to have to cash. So, that's a choice. And then kind of the last choice is a choice between, being rich and being wealthy. And I know we might talk about this a little bit more, but that's, you know, one of the choices you have to make. So for my short session, you know, if I got just one day, then those are the three kind of choices that that we discuss.
That's good. You know, I think that it's so appropriate when you talk about, you don't jump right into budgeting and numbers and the actual financial aspect. I don't think we always associate our mindset, our value system with our financial planning. And I think that that's a holistic approach, because you can budget, you can map out a financial plan for someone, but if they don't have an understanding of their mindset, their perspective, or value system around money, I don't think that there could be consistent follow through in keeping the financial plan. So understanding one's value system, I've never heard that before. I think that's an awesome way to approach it. And I like how you talk about the now me versus the future me, which is consistent with a number of things. I teach Bible class every week at my dad's church, and we were actually just talking about this last night around the things that we do today that impact who we are 50, 20 plus years from now. So if we exercise today, if we eat right today, if we watch what we eat today, and it's applicable in finances as well.
Exactly.
With, if we make those sacrifices and choices today, it impacts where we are from a robust perspective financially and having a good financial plan. When I look at the now versus future, I believe that that ties a bit to gratification. So how does gratification factor into that process?
Okay. Yeah, that's a good segue. And, you know, gratification is essential. And it's one of the kind of the aspects of, you know, creating good financial outcomes that we sometimes neglect. And, you know, when I look at gratification, I talk about it. It's all about celebration. You know, you've got to have a mindset. You know, we've, you know, this old tired cliche, you know, a glass half full mindset. So you've got to have that glass half full mindset. And, you know, one of the things I talk about is, we've got, in terms of gratification, we've got to concentrate on what we've accomplished, right? You know, we've got to kind of concentrate on the things that we've done well, as opposed to the things that we've done poorly. And, you know, I'll use a really bad analogy, but I think it might bring home the point in terms of how we look at things that we do in terms of like financial planning, goal planning is, you know, the baseball season is just starting up right now, and the basketball season is wrapping up. So if I look at baseball, an average time, right? So 25% of the time, he's going to do a good job. 75% of the time, he's going to fail. A good baseball player is going to fail 70% of the time, you know, and an exceptional baseball player is going to fail 60% of the time. But you never hear anybody put it that way. They always say that, you know, this person is a 300 hitter, which means that 30% of the time they'll have a hit. And the holy grail of baseball is to be a 400 hitter. So that means that baseball is saying 40% of the time I'm going to succeed, and that 40% of the time defines how that I'm successful. You know, we sometimes look at that 60% of failure as opposed to, you know, the 40% or 30% that we succeed. And you know, last thing is, you know, basketball, you know, the greatest three-point shooter in basketball history is a gentleman called Steph Curry. We, you know, we probably all know who he is. Steph Curry, his lifetime average is he fails to make that three-pointer 58% of the time. But nobody talks about the 58% that he's failed. They talk about the 42% of the time that he succeeded. So in terms of, you know, managing our finances or setting goals, we ought to look at, you know, where we've gone well and celebrate and be grateful for that, and then just kind of figure out how to make it better going forward.
No, that is a great example. I don't think that I think that's an awesome example. I'm not into sports. I don't know anything about sports. But when you put it in that perspective, you could use that almost for anything that a lot of times we do. We only see the good. Even on social media, people highlight what's going well in their life, but a lot of times what may not be going well, or the things that are not, that, you know, things that they're going through, trials or tribulations, are not easily seen. But that example, I think that that is wonderful. If I were to use that percentage in terms of my diet or my exercise, I'd be in the 90s, 90% failure. But I love that example. I'm going to have to start using that. And so when we look at gratification, it's related to celebrating. And so we are able to take the wins by eases that we put in our budget. Mm-hmm. What are some of the ways or tools that can help us to be better stewards so that we can get to that celebration?
Okay. So this is kind of where I get a little nerdy in terms of budgeting and finances is, you know, I mentioned earlier that I have this series called Good Stewardship, Managing the 90%. And, you know, part of that is, you know, once we get through all of the values base and the mindset stuff, we actually get into the number crunching. Okay. And there's like five criteria that I use. The first one is a positive net worth. So basically what net worth is you take all of the assets that you have, you know, your cash, your house, things that you have of value. You total that up. And then you take all of the money that you owe, all of the debt, you know, student loans, credit cards, mortgage, blah, blah, blah. You take all that together, you take the amount that you have, you subtract it from what you owe. And if that difference is a positive number, you know, just like at a starting level, then that's the first stage. You have a positive net worth. That means you have more assets than you have liabilities, or you own more than you owe. Okay. The second thing is a positive cash flow. And basically cash flow says, this is the income that I have on a monthly basis, you know, whether it's from my paycheck, my pension, you know, my IRA, whatever income you have coming in. And then you subtract the bills that you have to pay on a monthly basis, you know, your regular living expenses and your debt. You subtract that. If you have more money coming in than you have going out, then you have positive cash flow. You know, the old saying is, you know, have, you know, more money than month, right? You know, right. The month's over and I still got money left over. So positive net worth, positive cash flow. The third thing that makes someone a good steward is that they're credit aware. So they know, you know, what's on their credit report, and they know their credit score, and they know the difference between those two things. They know they'll, you know, credit report and a credit score aren't the exact same thing. So, you know that. So that's the third step. The fourth thing is that a good steward has a written budget. And, you know, what happens with a lot of people is they have a mental budget in terms of, you know, mine, but, you know, as you're a busy person and, you know, a lot of things go on in your life, and sometimes you can allow things to slip through the cracks, not intentionally, but because, you know, you're consumed by life. So if you have a written budget, then you've got something to go back to. And then the last one is a good steward is prepared for the inevitable. Mm-hmm. So I try to tell people that there are, you know, I think what Benjamin Franklin says, there's two things in life that are guaranteed: death and taxes. But there are actually three inevitable things that are going to happen to everybody, regardless of your socioeconomic status. These three things are going to happen in your life. You know, one is you're going to stop working. And it's going to be either by choice or by circumstance.
Right.
Some people. So a good steward prepares for, you know, those eventualities. A second thing is that something is going to break. You know, if you have a car, you have a house, you know, something's always going to break. I mean, you know, it could be your washing machine. It could be your tires. You know, your heart could get broken. Your nails could get broken. So a good steward is always going to be prepared for the inevitable breaking of something. And then the last one is, you know, we're all going to die. Mm-hmm. We're all going to pass away. So a good steward prepares for that. So those are kind of the first kind of tools that I use. And then the last thing is, you know, one of the things that I always do in life is I always try to prepare for obstacles that I know are going to come my way, right? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, there's nothing in life. You know, we can plan as well as we want, but something is always going to happen that kind of throw us off course. So we've got to be prepared for that. And then there's three kind of things that I always say I need to mentally prepare for. And one of the things, and you kind of talked about earlier in terms of, like, you know, trying to lose weight or trying to save money, is, you know, we've got to overcome the obstacle of this relentless pursuit of perfection.
Yes.
Right? So I set up my budget or I set up my goal, and then something happens and throws me off. And all of a sudden I say, well, it's not going to work. So I just throw in the towel because I've got this perfectionist mindset. The second thing is, and I got this from a book I read, it's called The Soul of Money by Lynn Twist. And she talked about this this myth of this toxic myth of scarcity that sometimes we have. And, you know, there's like three things, and I'll be real quick with this. One is this mindset that there's not enough. So if there's not enough, that means I got to get mine, or I got to get mine for those that are around me. So right. It leads to like this greed mindset. And then the second myth is that more is better. So, you know, I want to get more, you know, one house isn't good enough, or one car isn't good enough. I've got to have multiple, that, you know, so more is better. And then the last one, and I think it, you know, it impacts, you know, people of color and also women, is this mindset that, you know, that's just the way it is. And I can't do anything about it. So that keeps us kind of in a low point in our lives where we can't accomplish anything because we don't feel like we can do any better. And then the last thing is just this mindset of pride. Mm. And pride kind of manifests itself in kind of two ways. You know, one is, you know, I'm so concerned about the way other people see me that I can't admit that I'm wrong, right? I can't say that I can't do something. So pride is something that's really destructive. You know, I start with values because I want people to know that you're worth something and your opinion matters and you're no better or worse than anybody else. You're just different and you should appreciate that. And, you know, and you have to be able to ask for help. You know, a lot of times, you know, I'm a financial coach, and sometimes people feel shame that they need to hire somebody to help them coach with their finances. And, you know, pride prevents people from getting help because they don't want to admit they're wrong and they don't want to ask for help. So those are kind of the three kind of tools or ways that we can kind of deal with being stewards from that aspect.
And there's a number of things in what you said that continues to tie back that holistic approach, not just on the numbers. And so there's two things that you said that I wanted to talk a little bit more about, because we hear a lot about net worth and cash flow, our budget. And then even when you talk about planning for inevitable, that relates to either insurance or cash reserve, making sure we have a cash reserve, which, depending upon where you are, you want to have 3 to 6 months of cash available, that emergency cash for that item that breaks, potentially for medical expenses. But a lot of times for medical expenses, we would need more than 36 months. We might need 12 months to an 18 months. And so you would need a laddered effect around like short-term investments, whether it's CDs or market securities, which is a whole nother
right.
conversation. But talking about the credit aware, a lot of times, you know, people say, oh, you need to have a good credit score. But can you talk a little bit more about that, as far as what are the things that we should be paying attention to or be aware of as it relates to our credit?
Okay. So one of the things that I've kind of like changed my whole mindset on, which is kind of different than you're going to find out there in the industry, is I don't use the word good or bad credit. You know, some people say have good credit, have bad credit, but I don't use that because good and bad is a subjective kind of term. So in terms of credit, you know, if people have a low credit score, so what a credit score says is this is the possibility that you're going, if I extend you credit, if I give you a loan, that you're going to pay it back. So the higher that number is, the industry is saying the more likely you are to pay that bill back. Okay. So what happens is, if people have a low credit score, a lot of times there's a reason why they're there. So for example, you know, and you kind of made mention this a second ago, is sometimes somebody could have a low credit score because, you know, they lost their job because of illness, right?
You know,
you got sick, you couldn't work, you couldn't earn money, or you were in a two earner household. One person got sick, one person passed away, and then you had a hard time. So, you know, don't define yourself by that number. That number is random. No, one of the things that I say, and you know, it's kind of funny, is, you know, if you want to have a good credit score, don't go into debt. I mean, that's as simple as that. I mean,
right.
If you don't go into debt, you don't have to worry about your credit score. But if you do have to go into debt, then the most important thing is to pay your bills on time. That it's as simple as that. You know, even if you're just making the minimum payments, pay it on time. You know, you get a 29-day grace period to make a payment. So from the time you incur that debt until it's due, then, you know, you can make that payment. And, you know, a lot of people come to the coaching industry because of, you know, something that happened in their lives. There's something that happened that kind of drove us into this, where we wanted to, you know, we've helped ourselves get, you know, pull ourselves up. And now we want to help other people. So I'm kind of in the same way. So one of the things that I do in terms of, you know, managing my debt load or payments is I change my mindset. So, you know, you get a bill in the mail and it gives you a due date. You know, that's the date that the bill has to be paid by. So I flip it around and say the receipt date is the actual due date. I've got 24 hours from the time that bill hits my email box or I open that letter that I have to pay it. So, you know, I get my water bill in the mail. I get it today. Tomorrow, I'm paying that bill. So my due date isn't the date that they give me on that notice. It's the date that I've changed to where I am. And it's really important, you know, in this time of identity theft-ery,
yes,
that word is, you know, you need to check your credit report, which is just a list of all of the credit accounts that you have and your payment history. Look at that on a regular basis. You know, you can get a free copy from the three bureaus every year, once a year. So you should check that. And then a credit score is just the one that we're most familiar with is the FICO score, the Fair Isaac Company score. And basically what they do is they take the information from your credit report, they put it through an algorithm, and then they come up with a number. And that's all that it is. So you want to monitor that and make sure that that's headed in the right direction. And if it's not, then you got to examine, you know, why is it lower? And they'll tell you why, which is good. I mean, it tells you, you know, your score is low because you've got, you know, too many 90 days. And then your goal after that is to decrease the number of 90 days. Then over time, that'll get better.
Yeah. And one other aspect of that is that if the balances are too high on the accounts. So even if you're paying the minimum, one thing I also would tell people is do your best to keep your balance to about, like, if you have to use debt, like you said, you know, sometimes life happens and you might have to if you don't have adequate cash reserve, because sometimes multiple emergencies
right.
can happen where your cash reserve decreases. And so now you're using a credit card or other type of loan. And in that case, keeping the balance to 60% of whatever the total amount. So if the credit card allows you to charge $1,000, don't go over $600, because the closer you get to $1,000 is the more that it will impact your score in terms of decreasing it and not making the score not be as positive.
Yeah. And kind of the sweet spot in terms of, you know, when I talk to clients that are in credit card debt, is the sweet spot is 30%. So if you can keep your credit utilization rate, which is, you know, what you're talking about, if you can keep it to 30% or less, then that's going to have a big impact on your score. And if you can get it like in the 10-20% range, then that's even better. And the best way is, you know, I use my credit cards for points. So, you know,
yeah.
I'll charge something on the credit card because I've got the cash to pay it. So I'll just charge it there. Once it posts to my account, then I'll go in and pay it off. And then, you know, especially with, you know, when you have poor credit, you get the credit cards that charge you interest from the date that you made the purchase. So, you know, interest is a horrible thing. And, you know, one of the things I talk to people about is, you know, interest, I kind of describe it as the cost of impatience, right? You know, so if I can't pay for something and I charge it, then every month that I don't pay it off, you know, that's the cost of my impatience. So I got to pay extra on that. So, you know, make sure that you pay it off. If you're using it for points, to pay it off, you know, by the time the bill comes due, so you don't incur any interest charges and you get those valuable points.
Yes, especially like with the American Express card.
Right.
You just use it, but make sure you can pay the bill, and then you're actually earning the benefit of the points and the rewards. In this current market, what are some strategies that we should be tuned in to for long-term financial health and wealth?
Okay. So this is kind of a tricky area. So, you know, as a coach, you know, I can't give like financial right. advice, but what I can do is kind of talk about, kind of where people are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everybody's in a different situation. So one of the things I tell people is you should have, you know, 4 or 5 accounts. Everybody should have these 4 or 5 accounts. So, and some of them are like, duh, you know, but the reality is that not everybody does that. So the first account everybody has to have is a checking account. Mm-hmm. You know, at the beginning, I kind of mentioned the fact that, you know, one of the resources that we have to steward is our treasure. And, you know, our income. So there's like 3 kind of things that we have to do with money. You know, one is, you know, we spend it on consumption, you know, mm-hmm. living and stuff like that. Second is we save our money. And that's for security. Like you said, you know, you have to have, you know, people call an emergency fund or a just in case fund. So you got to save. And then the last thing is you can invest your money so it can grow over time. Okay. So, you know, the 3 accounts that kind of line up with that is first, you gotta have a checking account. Now, what we find is that about 1 in 4 people are what's known as unbanked or underbanked, which means that they either don't have a checking or savings account, or they do have one, but they use other like non-banking services like money orders and check cashing. So kind of the first place you start off with is you start with a checking account. And that's where you spend, you know, all of your money to pay your bills. The second account is a savings account because, you know, there's inevitable things that's going to happen. So we need to set aside money to cover some of those. We can't cover everything, right. But, you know, the majority of things that's going to go on in life, we need to be able to save for that. And we can create a savings account. You know, the good thing about, you know, the modern technology is now you don't even have to go into a bank to set up a checking or savings account. You can, you know, do it online. And get an online bank and get pretty good rates. So start with a checking account, start with a savings account. The third account that I always kind of advocate for people to have is a Roth IRA. And what a Roth IRA is, it's a retirement savings account that allows you to save money for something down the line when you stop working. You know, one of the reasons why I love Roth is it's all after-tax dollars. So it's basically money you have sitting around. You've already paid taxes on. So since you've already paid taxes on, you invest in a Roth account, and then that money grows tax-free. So if you're younger, you know, I really stress this to the younger people that I talk to, is, you know, if you're younger, you start putting money in there and you consistently do that over, you know, the course of your working career, you know, by the time you reach my age, you know, I'm an old guy, you can tell by the gray beard, you could have a nice chunk of change.
Yeah.
And the best part of it is that whatever you pull out, you pull it out and you never have to pay dime in taxes on it, you know, as opposed to like a savings account or another investment account. So, you know, you put in $10,000, you do a real good job investing, and now it's worth $1 million. And you wake up one day and says, I want to take that $1 million out. You take that $1 million out tax free. So, you know, that's, and then another added benefit is if you've got beneficiaries, you know, children, grandchildren, nieces, nephews, and you want to give that to them at your passing, they get to get that money and they don't have to pay a dime in taxes. So that's like a blessing that you can pass along to the next generation. And to use kind of, you know, like a scriptural kind of way to look at a Roth IRA is, you know, you pay taxes on the seed and you get the harvest tax free. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then the kind of the fourth and fifth account is, you know, I'm a big believer in generosity. So
as
a church person, you know, we give the tithe and we give the offering, but even if you're not in the church, you should still, you know,
benevolence.
Prioritize, you know, giving generosity, give back out of the blessing and the abundance that you have to somebody else. And then, you know, pay it forward. And then lastly is, you know, if you can afford it, you know, if you can do all those other things and you can afford it, then I always tell everybody, you know, get an investment account to continue to make your money grow outside of, you know, that retirement account. And you can almost use that investment account as, you know, your long-term savings. So you mentioned about 3 to 6 months, you know, maybe you keep three months in a savings account, you know, earning interest, something safe. And then the rest of it, you know, month 4 through 12 in an investment account. So that money can grow a little bit higher. So in terms of investments, you know, one of the things I say is diversification, you know, spread your investments across many, many kind of things. You know, the old people say, you know, don't put all your eggs in one basket. I don't think anybody says, nobody knows what that means, but don't put all your eggs in one basket. You know, what I find a lot of people, especially younger people, is they'll say, okay, I want to do Bitcoin, and that's all they do. Or somebody says, I want to invest in such and such a company, and that's all they do. So that means your financial success is tied to one or two companies' success. And, you know, Enron or, you know, one of those companies should have been a lesson to all of us that you can't put your eggs in one investment basket. So those are kind of the, you know, terms of success. And then have a long-term perspective or buy and hold. You know, I'm going to buy something unless the whole market crashes. I'm going to live with this until, you know, something dramatic changes where I want to kind of change that, like, allocation.
Yeah, no, those are great, great tips, or not just tips, but strategies for the long term. One of the big missteps I see people making is what you said lastly around people go to that fifth account where they're just trying to invest, but they don't have any type of protection. They don't have a cash reserve. They don't have anything that is focused for retirement. It's just this investment account. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the big missteps, especially for people now. When you talk about lack of the patience, people want to get rich quick. And so they don't want to go through the process of having these other initial accounts. Of course, most people often have a checking account, but not having a cash reserve and then jumping right into some type of investment. What would you like to share as your closing thoughts, and how can people contact you for your services?
Okay. So, you know, one of the things that, and you kind of hit on it at first is, you know, the mindset is the most important thing. And, you know, when I talk to people, you know, we're a consumeristic society, and a lot of our decisions are made based on what other people think that we should have. And, you know, like, there's nothing wrong with wealth. My job is to help people build wealth, but, you know, but you have to have a why to your what. You know, if I want to be rich, why is it that I want to be rich, or why is it that I want to be wealthy? And there's a difference between those two. You know, rich is, you know, having a lot of what I call is lifestyle assets, you know, home, car, house. You know, if you can live in it, drive it, or wear it, then it's a lifestyle asset. Where we ought to look to build wealth, which is, you know, assets that grow and appreciate in value over time. So, you know, so you've got to kind of connect those two. You know, what is the why? Why do I want to be rich, or why do I want to have money? And then the second thing is we have to realize that that our success, or, you know, what we want, is not based solely on money. There's got to be more than that. You know, we have to build relationships with our families and friends, and you know, if money can help us build greater relationships, then it's a good tool. So if anybody is, you know, interested in any of my coaching services, you know, my company's called Blue Skies Financial Coaches. You can actually go to my website, which is blueskiesplan.com. And in the upper right hand corner, there is a link to schedule a meeting. And I always tell people, you know, the first meeting is free. You know, time is, you know, we can always have a conversation. It doesn't cost anything to do that. And, you know, basically, in that introductory meeting, just kind of get a feel for, you know, who you are and what's important to you. You know, building wealth is great, but, you know, is building wealth going to make your life more better? Okay, all the English, all your English teacher listeners are going to send you something. But yeah, so, you know, we try to find out what's important to you, what's going to make your life happier, both now and in the future.
This has been great. So good and so appropriate for April Financial Literacy Month as a focus, but not just as a focus, steps that we can take to live a healthier life financially. Thank you so much, Fabian.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for this opportunity. It's been great. Thank you very much.